Okay, again, one more time. Perek Chaf Ches. We are up to the pasuk that discusses the forks. Do you use a fork at home? The pasuk tells us, pasuk Yud Zayin, Perek Chaf Ches, pasuk Yud Zayin, v'haniz logos. We are describing here all of the David is telling Shlomo HaMelech, I have collected enormous amount of gold and silver, and I have put it away in storage for the building of the Beis HaMikdash, and I'm giving it over to you. And I'm telling you what, I'm taking inventory, I'm telling you exactly what we have. And what we have is, when the Pasuk Yitzayin goes, yesterday we learned about the gold and the silver that was used for it. We discussed in detail for the shulchan, for the menorah, or the menoros. We discussed yesterday all the different types of the menoros. There was the menorah of Moshe Rabbeinu, there was the menorah, the 10 menoros that flanked the menorah of Moshe. There were the menoros in the various chambers, the lishkos, for the way the Kohanim would eat, and in the courtyards, and so on and so forth. Then we learned about the tables. There were shulchanos. And the shulchanos was, of course, the shulchan of Moshe Rabbeinu, upon which the lechem panim was arranged. And then there's another 10 shulchanos, which also, according to one opinion, the Gemara had the lechem upon him. And then there was a shulchanos that were used for the preparation of the meat, the flaying and the cutting of the meat that was put on the mizbech by the Kohanim. And now the one thing that does not say that we have a right to assume there were tables that were used by the Kohanim to eat. Now this is a very big debate among the Rishonim. Did the Kohanim sit down when they ate? When you look at a model of the Beis HaMikdash, there are numerous models. One thing you don't see in all of the models, you don't see picnic tables. Picnic tables for the... So that's the question. Right, that's a very big question. You don't see picnic tables and benches. Well, picnic table has the bench built in. So you don't see where the Kohanim, what were they doing the whole day? They were eating. They were busy eating.
They sat on the steps.
So this is a debate. I believe the Meiri says, it says the Pasuk L'mashcha, that the Kohanim eat the kodshim in the state of nobility. And from that, the Meiri and other Yishonim learned that the Kohanim are mechuyev to sit down when they eat kodshim, just like they're mechuyev to eat it with condiments and all different types of delicacies to make it enjoyable. They have to eat a dignified way. Eating, sitting on the floor, maybe, you know, the Orientals, they in Baghdad, they put a pillow on the floor. Like that's how the people from Baghdad, they would sit. They have some very nice pictures of Rav Avadi Yosef, Zechzak Levracha, and they show that the Sfardim, that's how they sit. Like you say, that's the way they sit on the floor with their feet. Rugs like right. That's work right. But not everyone agrees. That's the way that we the Bnei Yisrael sat in ancient times. Maybe some did, some did not. So therefore, the Meiri and other Rishonim hold that you are mechuyev to sit when you eat kadoshim. This is difficult because we have Chazal ain yeshiva ba'azara ella lemalchei beistav v'bulva. The only one that's allowed to sit in the azara are kings that come from Shevet Yehuda, and that was the reason why Yeravim ben Nevat, he built his own Beis HaMikdash, because he knew that if he would become the Ohel Regel, he would not be allowed to sit. David would be sitting and he would be standing. So in order that people should not see that he is standing and David is sitting, and that would right away trigger in the minds of the people that the real king is David, and they would abandon Yeravim and follow David, he decided to build his own Beis HaMikdash and have a Avodah Zarah. But what do we learn from that Chazal that you're not allowed to sit? How then can the Meiri say you can sit? So the answer is there's an exception. You stop just for relaxation, you're not allowed to sit unless you're the king, David HaMelech, Malchus Beis David. But when you're eating Kodoshim, you are allowed, and in fact, Mechuyev, to sit. And therefore, in all the models of the Beis HaMikdash, you would have to eat in the Azara picnic tables because people were sitting and eating kodashim. The lishkos were half. The Beis HaMikdash, half of it was part of the Kodesh and half was not part. So they had to be sitting on the part. If only a small area, was there really enough room there for all the Kohanim to eat the kodashim in that little chamber? Maybe yes. I mean, the rules were not according to the rules of Teva. Things happened in the Beis HaMikdash, which don't matter Teva. But it is a very interesting point. It has a very nafkamina. A person can bring this down is Pidyon HaBen. Pidyon HaBen, when you redeem the son, should it be done sitting or standing? So the few times I've been to a Pidyon HaBen, it was done standing. But I remember my father, Zichron Levracha, told me that he went to Pidyon HaBen, and there was a very big Talmud Chacham present, and he insisted that the Kohen sit because of this idea of Moshcha, that everything, that every avoda that a Kohen does, even though it has to be done in a state of dignity, and dignity requires that you sit, you don't stand. Birchas Kohanim, right, so there, why do we stand? La'amur l'shares, there maybe it's a pasuk, I don't, do not know, it's a good point. But there when you're giving a gift, I assume the answer is l'mashcha, that pasuk, we have to study, look at the pasuk.
There's other avodas, shechita, he's not going to do shechita sitting,
is the ma'akev? I remember years ago seeing a sefer on the windowsill in Tarvadas, big, thick sefer, and the whole sefer covered every area in halacha. If you should sit or stand, the makoros of sitting and standing, it's a little obsessive, right? It's a little obsessive to go through.
Also, according to Brisky, that you should sit when you're
sure. By Brisky, what? By Birchas Eretz in the Suin?
You're right. You're making a break on the Yayim. Why shouldn't you sit?
So they sit?
By Havdalah they sit.
Havdalah they sit. Kiddush. What do you sit by a wedding? What do you sit by a wedding? So do they do that?
It's not a suit.
Did you ever see that?
You
never seen that?
You sit down the Mokum Suda. That's the reason you sit. I never,
by under a chuppah, I never saw someone sit under a chuppah. Never. Maybe there is such a thing. I don't know. Okay, but the point I want to make, we have here shulchanos. And a shulchan, normally, when you have a shulchan, normally, a shulchan, the way we understand a shulchan is you sit down by a table. That's what you do. Now, obviously, when the shulchan is just to hold the lechem upon him, so the shulchan is to...
The Gemara says by Pesach, the of a seva, was that everyone had their own little table.
Right.
So the table so was
that's
the table
a seva.
That was, it wasn't a table you sat by. It was a table that was a low table, and you leaned on your couch.
Okay.
The
point I just want to make is that you look at the Mefarshim, when they talk about the menorah, some of them mention not only were there menorahs, it says over here there were multiple menorahs, gold and silver. Not only were there menorahs for the mitzvah of halakas haneros, there were menorahs for illumination for the kohanim in their chambers, in the courtyard, when they ate the kachim, when they walked in at night. There were a lot of menorahs for private use for the kohanim. When it comes to the shulchanos, there's not one word. The shulchanos here, it says the same exact expression. There are gold shulchanos, there are silver shulchanos, there's a lot of shulchanos. They're giving you the measurements. What are the shulchanos for? So, right away, the shulchan of Moshe Rabbeinu, of course. And then the 10 shulchanos of Shlomo. And then they mention two other shulchanos, the most you're going to find. The shulchanos in the Beis HaMitzvah Chaim, in the area of the Beis HaMitzvah where they prepared the meat. And then there was another shulchan that's also mentioned by the Mizbeach. In front of the Mizbeach, on the west side of the Mizbeach, there was another shulchan where they put a couple of kelim that were necessary for the avoda on the Mizbeach. That's it. But there's no mention, not that I've come across anyway, the Mepharshim that mentioned just like there were menorahs that were used, that's, and we read that into the pasuk, that were used for the kohanim for their private illumination when they ate the kadoshim and when they walked around the Beis HaMikdash, they needed a light when it got dark at night. So they also need private tables to store their private possessions, right? And especially if they're eating kadoshim, that's what they're there for. They eat va'achlu oisam asher kubah, they're eating kadoshim, there's a lot to be eaten. And when you eat l'mashcha, you got to sit down by a table. Has to be done in a derech kavod. No, that the mefarshim are completely silent. I've yet to find anyone that says in these psukim here that is going to be a shulchanos for private use. Just a point I want to make, and it's not, maybe you're right. Maybe taka there were no shulchanos because, like the rishonim, they learned that you're not allowed to sit down. You have to sit on the floor. You have to stand when you eat the kachem.
Any place in the Beis HaMikdash?
What?
I mean, was there like a break room like you have here in the back?
The Beis Hamoikad. The Beis Hamoikad was a private room. It was divided. It was half of it was built in the section that was Kodesh, and the half was built in the section that was Chol. They slept there. They warmed themselves up there. That's where they congregated when they were off duty, when they had a break. Instead of going Dunkin' Donuts and parking the police car outside, they went into the Beis HaMikdash.
What? Did they eat there too?
Yeah, well, in the part that's Kodesh, Kodshim, which are Kodshe Kodoshim, can be eaten there on the section that is Kodesh. But L'chor, they ate in the whole Azara. The whole Azara was a place for the Kohanim to eat. And where are the picnic tables and all the models? So that's a question that we shine him. And it's such an amazing thing that we have no records. The Migdash existed for 420 years. So where are the records? What did they do? Were there tables? Did they eat? Did they sit? Did they stand? It's all lost. How could that be? How could there be such a long period of time? Exactly what happened in the Beis Hamikdash, how they ate the kachem, we don't even know. It's just an amazing thing, what's been lost from us. Okay, let's now go to the next section. Now we come to the forks. Now this is a very interesting pasuk, and there's a fascinating Ibn Ezra. And Ibn Ezra is not here, it's in Parshas Truma. Parshas Truma, and it changes the whole understanding, it opens up a whole new understanding into the Bayis Sheni, and the Bayis Rishon, and the Bayis Sheni. Now let me just give you a little bit of Hakdama. In the Bayis Rishon, the one thing we know for sure, that the bias, the structure, the building, is different than the structure of the Mishkan. The Mishkan had Urios, had the first layer had 5 and 5, the second had 6 and 5, and the cover went had certain dimensions, and the Kodesh had certain dimensions, Kodesh HaKodashim. There was no Ulam, there was no Beis HaChalifos, there was a Chotzer with very specific details of Amudim and strands, the Chashukehem, gold and silver, a lot of the... All of those things disappeared in the Bayis Rishon. It's a whole new structure. It's a whole new world. Everything in the Bayis Rishon completely changed, at least as far as the structure was concerned. And this, of course, was Lapi Ruach HaKodesh. But what about the Kalim? The Kalim, well, those are the same. The Aron didn't change, as far as we know. The Aron was exactly the same way. Aron didn't change. The Kir did change. The Kir, we had the Amshel Shlomo. And we had Shlomo made the Muchni, these wagons. You have to look in the books, picture books. They show these fascinating wagons that were used to replace the Kir. The Kir, it appears to be, was retired. They had a new system for the Kir. But what about the Mizbeach HaZohav? It was the same. What about the menorah? It was the same. What about the aron? It was the same. The mizbech hanachoshes, completely different. It was no longer. It was 28 by 28 in the bayis. We shown 32 by 32. The dimensions and with the yisoy, the soyvev, it was very different. What about the shulchan? Was the shulchan exactly the same? I would assume it was. I would assume that the Shulchan in the Bayis Rishon and the Bayis Sheni was a carbon copy, if not exactly the same one they had from Moshe Rabbeinu. According to the Ibn Ezra, he opens up the possibility that it wasn't the same. The Shulchan, and for that matter, who knows, maybe the menorah, maybe there was something that we don't know, was a little bit different. Now, why would you want to say that? It comes from this pasuk. This pasuk here says, it lists a whole number of things that David prepared for the Bayis Rishon. Havahamiz logos. What does that simply mean? It means a fork, a pitchfork. It was used, what did they use pitchforks for? For the Mizbeach. They had to stir, they had to move around the meat on the fire of the Mizbeach to make sure that it burns properly throughout the entire night. You need tools, special shovels, forks, and a mizlogos. Next, vahamizrokos. What are mizrokos? Bowls. So seemingly, lashon of zurika, these were bowls that were used to do for korbanos. All korbanos that required zurika. Next, the hakisavos. Now, what in the world is this? So the most similar word we have to the word hakisavos is what we find with regard to the shulchan. The shulchan had many parts. It had what was called minakiyosav, kisosav, kapoisav. It had all these different things. One of the things that we find in reference to the shulchan is this thing called the kisosav, which is the same word, come out the same sharish, and we have a right to assume, based on the similarity, that's what we are referring to. What was this? This is a very minor part of the shulchan. It was a hollow tube that provided ventilation in between the loaves of bread, at least according to most of the Rishonim. Many of some hold it was actually the part that kept the breads in place on the side to which these hollow tubes were inserted. But let's learn very simply, according to Rashi, the kisosav we have the shulchan of a flat table, and then there's a stand, there's a very tall stand, and the stand, there are many different opinions exactly what the stand looked like, all depends on which picture book you look at, what the stand looked like, and into this stand there were tubes. What were the purpose of these tubes? These tubes were the shelves. Basically served as shelves for the 12 loaves of bread. There were 5 levels. There were 6 loaves of bread. The lowest level went on the ground, on the table itself. And then went 5 shelves for five more levels of bread, and each level, each bread was separated by a shelf. The shelf was a tube. It was a hollow tube in order to allow air to circulate among the loaves of bread. And these tubes were supported by the stand. That's what it says with regard to the Shulchan. Now the problem is, if you want to talk about the different parts of the Shulchan, there are seemingly more significant parts of the Shulchan. There are especially the stands, the sides of the Shulchan, which actually supported these hollow tubes. They were much more significant, they were much more elaborate, they were much more, and there's no mention of that. That is completely omitted, ignored here in Sefer Divrei Hayamim. Maybe you want to talk about the molds, the ka'aros. It says, what about the basins to hold the bazichin, to hold the lavona, the frankincense, which was part of the lechem aponim? With the bread, there was incense that was burnt on the mizbeach every Shabbos. So where was that incense stored, that frankincense stored? It was stored in what was called kapoisaf, in special basins. There's no mention of that here. What about the molds? But when they baked the lechem aponim were extremely delicate, had a very unique shape. And the shape almost defied the laws of physics for it to remain in place. And that shape, that mold, was called the ki'oroisaf. The machlokes in the Gemara, was it round? Was it square? Was it like a box? Bent in, bent out? Whatever it was no easy job. It required incredible skill to produce the lechem aponim in the precise shapes. And it was done by using special molds. There's no mention of that here. Only thing that we're going to mention with regard to the various parts of the Shulchan are what appears to be the most insignificant part of the Shulchan, the little hollow tubes that keep the, that separate the loaves of bread one from the other. That's what it says in the Pasuk. The Pasuk says we have here pitchforks, which are clearly being used for kachim, for the mizbeach, v'ha mizrakos, big bowls, v'hake savos, and tubes, zohov tar. They are made from the purest gold. So maybe you'll answer. The reason why we'll mention the most insignificant part of the Shulchan is because this part of the Shulchan is because the other parts of the Shulchan were not from Zohav Tar. That's an approach. The other parts of the Shulchan were much more elaborate, much bigger, much larger, so they could not afford to make those parts of the Shulchan from Zohav Tar. They were made from low-quality gold. Gold that was not the best quality. Because the pasuk goes further. What else was there?
Let's read the whole. It was quality, but it was coated.
Okay, right. Okay, it was coated. It needed to be other. But it wasn't. It, that's why the pasuk separates. That's a very valid approach. This was a very small piece, so therefore this can be. It does need to be. It can be pure gold inside out. It's not coated. It's not a gold that's less quality, and that's why it's mentioned here together with these other things which are made from pure gold. Let's read from the pasuk. What else was there? There was also the lichfirei hazahav, bowls of gold. Now, what are these bowls? These are lichfirei, the same exact thing as mizrukos. So the answer seems to be that we have to remember that we discussed this 2 days ago. When it comes to kachim, every carbon is brought on the mizbech differently. There are, if I'm not mistaken, three ways to apply blood to the mizbech. There's zurika, there is hazah, there is nesina, and there's shvicha. The carbon pesach and the carbon maaseh behema, the blood was poured on the bowl, and you pour the bowl on the foundation of the mizbech. A carbon shlamim and a carbon ola and kaman, all of the carbonos, with the exception of chatos, they were done with zurika. How do you do zurika? You fill up a bowl of blood and you throw it. You don't throw it with your hands. You throw it with the utensil. You take the utensil and you throw it. You splash it. Then there is the carbon chatos. How do you apply chatos, a carbon chatos? Well, it's not on the bottom part of the mizbeach. You go up the ramp, and then you make a detour, and you go to the small ramp. You go up the main ramp, you go a little bit to the right, and there's a small, you go up on the soidev, and you walk along this very narrow step, narrow path. Very dangerous. You can fall off. It's you're 12 feet in the air. Not so simple. I assume if you're afraid of heights, you're not going to exactly go up to do the zurika. And what do? You dip your finger in the bowl.
Right.
You get dirty. When you bring carbon chatos, the coin gets dirty. When the Kohen brings the other carbon, he doesn't get dirty. He dips his finger in the bowl, no gloves. He touches the blood, and he puts the blood on the corner of the Mizbeach. Now, what happens to his finger? It's all full of blood. It's so now, if he's going, that blood is already used up. If he's then going to take his finger, dip his finger into the bowl, he's going to make the bowl dirty. It's like Shirayim, that blood, when you go to the next corner, you have to put the blood in all four corners. You have to walk around. So it seems you have to use the etzba. Could be there's a hakpada to use the etzba. The blood is dirty from the blood. That blood is cannot be used for another corner. If you're going to put your blood inside, you can have a tarubis. So it's a hill you have to ask the OU what to do. We have a kashra shayla. A tarubis of blood that was meant for one corner, now you want to use for corner number two. So it says a chazal, they took their finger and they wiped it on the back of the bowl. They take their finger. Okay, don't try this at home.
They say if you have fishy's fingers, you wipe it on a metal.
If you have what?
Bowl. If you think the smell of garlic. Or
yeah. On a metal bowl, yeah. On a metal.
Metal bowl.
Okay.
Balls,
if it works, it works.
You want to really clean your hand.
But over here, you take your finger, and what do you do with your finger? You wipe it on the back of the bowl. Now, the word to wipe in Hebrew means koifer. Koifer means that's the translation. Koifer zav means to wipe. So the pasuk here is telling us there were two types of bowls. There were mizrukois and there are koifer zav. At first glance, they're exactly the same. Both of them are terms which refer to bowls. They're both made. Look, this one's made from silver, right? This one's made, but why was there a need for a bowl of gold and a bowl of silver? The answer appears that they serve different functions. The bowl, the mizrukos, comes from the word zurika. Zurika means to throw. So when you bring a carbon oila or carbon shlamim or carbon taiga, all the requires zurika, you slaughter the animal, you fill up the bowl of blood. That's a certain type of bowl that was suited, that was designed, that engineers that knew how to design the bowl perfectly to enhance the zurika. Certain shape does a good zurika. Go to the sharper image, they'll have for you this type of bowl. When you move it, the blood flows. But when you go on top of the mizbeach, first of all, you don't have a lot of room to maneuver up there. You got to be very careful. You don't want to lose your balance. The bolts had to be designed differently because you're carrying it all the way up the top of the mizbeach. You're walking all around this very narrow path, and you have to. You're applying the blood by dipping your finger, and you have to have space on the bowl to wipe your finger on the back of the bowl in order to clean your fingers so you can get a fresh new blood for the next corner. So it's two different types of bowls for different types of korbanos. The koifrei kesef are for chatos, which is lamala, and the mizrukos are for the korbanos which are brought on the bottom. Yeah.
Koifer zav.
So I saw one of us said that during the weekday they were machal between the weekday and Shabbos. You have the weekday talis and the Shabbos talis. Different for the weekday, so they just had silver. For Shabbos, it was gold. But the fact is, we find in Sefer Melachah they only made gold. And this is the far shem answer.
Isn't the chatos somehow tied
into the kodesh kadoshim?
But it's tied into the
eagle. Tied into the eagle in kategenas sanega. Maybe it's a very good idea. That's why it has to be kesef, not gold. Egel Hazah, very good point. Maybe that's why Dafka Kesef. Very interesting. Very interesting. Yeah.
When we say Yom Kippur avoid achas b'achas.
Yes.
What is he doing? He's doing with the finger.
He's doing. That's another type of that's called Hazah. Very good. That's the fourth type of application. That's called Hazah with the finger. You sprinkle with the finger, but you're not applying it to any location. There he's inside the Kodesh HaKadoshim.
He's doing it on the Parayches.
That's Machlokes, it's a touch. But he's doing Kineged, does a touch, but he's flicking it. Later he comes to the Mizbeach. Later, when he finishes, then he goes to the Mizbeach and he puts on the four corners of the Mizbeach. No, he does not. Doesn't touch.
Towards the Kapara.
Twice. Right. First, inside the Kodesh HaKadoshim, towards the Aron. Towards the kapires, the cover of the aron, and then he does it again outside in the kodesh towards the paroiches, mavdil between the kodesh and the kodesh hakodashim. So that is called hazah, correct? That is called hazah. That's called nesina. That's not called hazah. No, if I'm not mistaken, that's a matana or in Israel matana. that's a matana. That's right. That's not called asus. You have basically four different types of application. There's shvicha, pouring. There is zrika, throwing. And there is nesina, or called a matana. And then there is hazah, where you just flick. You flick with your finger. Achas lamala shev lamata. Also the mitzora. You flick on him. I'm not exactly sure if you actually touch him, or you just also hazah. You throw blood towards him, towards the mitzora from the kurbanos. Okay, so here we have lukayfri akesef b'mishkol. Let me show you from the pasuk. Hamiz logos, hamiz rokos, fakisavos, zohavtar. Period. Then we have v'lichpayrei hazav. Then there are other types of bowls which are used for the chatos. They're called wipers. The reason why they're called koifrei, it means a wiper to wipe your finger. Hazav b'mishkol, according to its defined weight. Lichfar uchfar, for each individual type of bowl. I guess to a different assortment of bowls, maybe for different sizes of kohanim, or maybe different days of the week, or different festivals for Rosh Chodesh. Different types of animals, exactly. There could be many different requirements. A lot of this we do not know. And furthermore, then there was the lichfarei, those were the silver bowls, and then we have, those are the gold bowls, and then we have the silver bowls. The lichfarei hakesef b'mishkol, and for the bowls of silver according to their defined weight, lichfar uchfar, for each bowl according to its requirements. Okay, so this is one approach to explain pshat in the pasuk. Pitchforks, large bowls, then we have these kisavos, these little tubes for the shulchan. These were made from zohav tar. And then there were other things, the other bowls for chatos, they have a different term, and they were made from silver and from gold, not necessarily the best gold, whatever it was. The Ibn Ezra says an incredible chiddush. He says that being that this pasuk Yud Zayin, is connected, is juxtaposed to pasuk Tes Zayin, and pasuk Tes Zayin is discussing the shulchanos. Everything it says in Pasuk Yud Zayin is referring to the Shulchan. These are not pitchforks. We're not discussing pitchforks. L'chor, they didn't go waste the finest gold for pitchforks. It was a very tremendous doichik. They go the best gold they can use for the pitchfork, and the gold that's not so good, they're going to use for the bowls to collect the blood. It's hot. It's going to melt. It's going to melt. It's going to get ruined. Your hand's going to burn. It's going to get ruined. What? They use gold, the finest gold pitchforks, the kayanim. It's not mistake. They get worn out in 2 minutes. So now you don't put it in contact with it. The Gemara tells that the Mizbeach Hazov, it was a miracle that it didn't get worn out, because gold with fire for the Ketores every single day wouldn't last 5 minutes. So here they're using pitchforks, though, day and night, karbanas, finest gold. So he says, no, that's not Shana Pasuk. Shana Pasuk, Pasuk Yitzayin is a continuation of Pasuk Tezayin. We're discussing the Shulchanos. And each word here is referring to another part of the Shulchan. What were the parts of the Shulchan? Let's review. We have the Asisa let me go in the order. We have what's called Uminakiyosaf. That word appears in Parshas Truma with regard to the Shulchan. That word refers to the stands. You have a table, make believe a flat table, and then along the sides of the table were stands. You have to go back and look at the picture books, and there are many opinions exactly what the stands. There were three branches. It was one big board, other different shapes and sizes. They went along the side of the shulchan to secure, to hold the bread in place, but really to serve as a placeholder for the tubes that would be inserted from one to the other. The word that the pasuk used in Sefer Parashas Truma is uminakiyosaf. The Ibn Ezra in Parashas Truma says the word mizlogos is another word for minakiyosa. It's the same thing. Not a pitchfork. What's a pitchfork? Pitchfork has three prongs. What do those stands look like? So if you look at the old tabernacle book, art school, they also present it like that. They also present it. It looks like a pitchfork. Those stands that come up along the side of the table have three branches. So with three branches going up, looks like an upside down pitchfork. Unbelievable. So it's very simple. The pasuk here is just using another word that was more familiar to the people living in the time of Ezra and Nehemiah than the word, the biblical word that was found in the Torah. Ezra and Nehemiah, they were like work of art scroll. They were giving you, they're updating the language, something that's more current. That's very common in Devar Hayam. A lot of these words which Chazatas, this was something which is more current in his time, and that's why he selected this word. Next, the hamizrokos. What's a mizrokos? I told you it means a bowl, a big bowl to do zrika. No, it refers to the mold, the osisa ki oroisaf. When you made the lechem aponim, you made molds. The molds look like big bowls. And in fact, maybe the reason why it's called a mizrok to throw when you're a baker, they throw around the bread. Because it's not good. That's part of the chokhmah. You have if bread is attached to the oven. There's a chokhmah in removing the bread. You don't just pull the bread off the oven. If you pull the bread off the oven, you'll ruin the bread. You have to know how to throw around the bread in a very skilled way. So the word that's been used to update the ancient word ki oroisav, which refers to the special mold in which the lechem aponim was baked, has been updated here in Sefer Divrei Hayamim with the word mizrokos. Next word. Now the word hakisavos fits perfectly in line. Kisavos refers to the tubes. That's exactly what we're dealing with. The shulchan. The shulchan. What was attached to the sides of the shulchan? The tubes. Zahav tar. What else was there? V'lichfarei ha-zahav b'mishkol. What's the kifarei ha-zahav? These are the bazichin upon which the Levoina was stored upon the Lechem upon him. And guess what it says here? There were different types of bazichin. There were gold bazichin, there were silver bazichin, depending on time of the year, different events. And even with regard to the other things, the mizlagos, the mizrukos, the Ibn Ezra seems to suggest, or at least the way I saw this presented in the art scroll, is that since we're using different words, it could very well be that it's not just... An updated version of the word. It could be that it actually looked different. That the shulchan of Shlomo HaMelech had a different design. It wasn't an exact replica of the shulchan of Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu, Ruach HaKodesh, the Torah told you this, how I want the shulchan to appear. And we have precedent for this. The Mizbeach HaNechoshes wasn't the same. The Mizbeach HaNechoshes was replaced by an entirely new structure. The whole Beis HaMikdash was completely replaced by, the Mishkan was replaced by an entirely different structure. It could very well be that the change of nuance of word indicates that it wasn't just a new word for the same exact thing. There was Ruach HaKodesh that the design of the mold for the bread, and the design of the tube, and the design of these stands, and the design of the bazichon should be a little bit different than it was in the time of Moshe.
So that explains the machlokes. If the lechem aponim was square or round,
well, that's
could have been square in one situation.
Could have been square like the menorah. Also, was the menorah round? Was the menorah a V? It could be. It could be different. Well, that in the mefarshim said that it's. Everyone agrees what appears in the mefarshim is that it's kashim. Even the Maal Yom that says that you're supposed to make the lechem aponim as a box. If you make the lechem aponim round, it's kosher. It could very well be that each mishmar, as we discussed, they had their tradition. When mishmar number 30, when mishmar number, and even among the square, how do you make it square? You go look at the mefarshim. There's so many different opinions of how. It could very well be that each mishmar had their tradition. That's what gave the mikdash diversity. When you come to the Beis HaMikdash, it's always going to be different because every week there's a new mishmar, there's a new crew. And the new crew is not just, they've all been trained in the same place. They all come from a different city. Everyone has their traditions. And when a new mishmar arrives in the Beis HaMikdash, they bring with them their customs, their minhagim, their nusach. That's right. Their minhagim. How do you do shechita? right? So we know today that it's a very controversial thing. Shchita, who does shchita? Chassidus shchita, Litvish shchita, Lubavitch shchita, this shchita. They have their minhagim. They do different things. They have different types of knives and different types of.
They only use one knife.
They didn't have this thing to steal knives.
Because of what goes on, all the knives are Chassidus knives.
Chassidus knives now. Okay, everything is
well, it's easy.
Was it say it's just the set, you know, why
okay, right, yeah, okay. So that is, this is a novel interpretation. It's a very beautiful interpretation. It opens up a whole new understanding of this pasuk. This pasuk Yud Zayin is a continuation of the pasuk Tes Zayin. We're discussing the Shulchan. It makes a lot of sense. Why are you jumping around? We discuss the Shulchan, we discuss the different parts of the Shulchan. Kesavos is not in the middle of nowhere, it's part of all the different utensils. We're dealing with the stands, with the tubes, with the mold. And we have just different words. And the reason why there are different words is for one of two reasons. Either because it's just an updated version of this word, or hidden in this word is a revelation that Hashem wants the Kalim to be a little bit different. I don't want, just like the structure is going to be different, just like the Mizbeach is going to be different, guess what? I want the Shulchan also to be a little bit different. Al Pi Ruach HaKodesh. It's basically the same, you have the same parts, but the design is a new model. It's a new high-tech model for the generation of Shlomo HaMelech. That is how the Ibn Ezra appears to learn Pshat in this Pasuk. Okay, now let's go to Pasuk Yud Ches. Now we're going, it makes a lot of sense. Now we've discussed the menorah, and we've discussed the shulchan, all of its parts. Now we're going to the next object in this same chamber, in the Kodesh. Ulimizbeach hakitoires. Zohav mizukok. Now mizukok seems to be a different type of gold. The Zohav tahar, that was in the previous pasuk. And now we have something called Zohav mizukok, purified gold. What's the difference? I do not know. The Gemara discussed there are 13 types of gold. Different degrees of purification. So is this better than Tohar? Which one is a higher level of gold? I don't know. Zav Mizukok. Different types of flowers for the Karbonos. Different types of oil. Different types of oil for the menorah. But you have Zav Mizukok B'mishkol according to its weight. There was a certain amount of gold that was needed to make, construct the Mizbech HaKetores. Yesterday, I think even Rashi here says, what happened to the Mizbech of Moshe Rabbeinu? So it could be that either there was an upgrade, it was a new model, there was some shinuyim. We don't know the details. We don't know the exact details of the shinuyim. That's why David is telling Shlomo, I have received a message from Hashem that it should be a little bit different. I'm giving you the tavnis, what it should look like. Or it should be maybe Moshe's Mizbech was retired. It was stolen. It was plundered by the Pelishtim, and it was needed. Now we needed to replace it. Next, now here's another very interesting thing. Tavnis. Now that we've discussed the kelim in the Heichal, we're going closer. We're going into the Kodesh Hakadoshim. Ulatavnis, the image Hamerkava of the chariot. What chariot? They didn't have cars in those days. So what chariot? The Kruvim. The Kruvim is the Merkava, is the chariot of Hashem. Now the pasuk describes, what is the Merkava? New word. We don't refer to the kapires with the word Merkava. So the pasuk here provides us some explanation. Hakruvim. The Merkava is nothing other than the Kruvim. It's an explanation. Zohof. It should be made from gold. Notice it does not say Zohof Tohar, does not say Zohof Mizukok, it just says ordinary gold. Lif for a sim, in order enough gold to enable it to spread, for them to spread their wings. The Seichachim, in order they can shelter, provide schach, like a sukkah. The Seichachim al Aron Bris Hashem, upon the Aron Bris Hashem. Okay, so now, first of all, we have to know that in the Shlomo HaMelech, he made, in addition to the Aron of Moshe, he made two massive size kruvim. You come into the Aron, into the Kodesh HaKadosh, we have the Aron of Moshe in the center, and then on the side, there were these gigantic kruvim on the floor, and their wings covered the entire Kodesh HaKadoshim. Where does that come from? We do not know. What? Ruach HaKodesh. We don't know why that was
required. First time.
Yes. He doesn't say.
In the base of Migdash there.
Well, they always were kruvim. The kapores has kruvim, but they were very small. It was, the aron was 2.5 amos by 1.5 amos. The aron, it was very small. It was a small little box. On top of that box, there was small little kuvim, which had their wings spread on top of the aron. It was relatively small. Here, Shlomo HaMelech, in the Bayis Rishon, not only do we have the aron with its kapores, we're going to have an additional two massively sized angels, kuvim, with massive wings, whose wings spread and cover the entire Kodesh HaKadosh.
And that's used the term angel.
Doesn't say.
Do we know what they were?
The Kuvim? The Kuvim, they had the. So the Gemara says what's they look like a child. They look like a Kuv is a.
Cherub.
So what's a cherub? What is that?
Cherub,
an angel. Is some type of celestial creature. We don't know what it is. We really don't know. All the picture books, they make believe they have these nice pictures, so that we have really no clue what it looks like. The Gemara says the face, the parts of look like a child. Like a child. A young boy, a young girl, it looked like a child. That's all we know, the parts of. Other than that, we do not know what it looked like, how they looked. But now, are we referring here to the Kuvim of Shlomo? It doesn't say. It just says...
Targum seems to say that it is...
The Kuvim of what? I don't have the Targum in front of me. What does the Targum say? So which kuvim are they?
It's the tsuras kaparta, which is the kaporas, and matan alaron kayamad Hashem. So
Moshe's.
Right.
Moshe's, not the ones of Shlomo HaMelech. Okay, fine. So that's. So he's just telling him, then that would mean that David HaMelech, who did not even, in his lifetime, didn't even know there should be these math. That was something that Shlomo invented, or I don't know. It doesn't say. Whatever it is, it is. Okay, so now, one point I want to make, I don't know the significance, but there is definitely very little significance. If you learn, when you learn Sefer Yecheskel, there's the Maisa Merkava. So Mepharshim immediately discussed this concept. It's a very beautiful concept that Hashem, in Chazal, appears to be resting in one of two places. Sometimes Hashem is called Yoshev al Kisei. Hashem al Kisei Ram Venisa. Hashem sits on His throne. And sometimes we find Hashem is sitting on the Merkava, on the chariot. Oh, exactly. Just like a president, every head of state, they have their Oval Office, right? They have Lahavil Elif Alf Avos, there's the Oval Office. And then they have Air Force One, Marine One, the Beast, special limousine for the president. Galus and Bisman. So what's the difference? Bisman, everything is fine, and the HaKadosh Baruch Hu is at rest. And the HaKadosh Baruch Hu is sitting in his, what we call the Oval Office, Al Kisei Ram Benisa. But when a Klal Yisrael is in Galus, so Hashem Ima Yanochi Bitzara, Hashem says, you're in a matzav of galus, you're in exile. You know what? I'm also going to go into exile. I'm going to go into my emergency bunker.
That's why Yecheskel's had the wheels.
So that's why Yecheskel is his man of galus. Yecheskel, Yeshayah, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Yeshayah, his mar was, well, I don't know, I remember the details. Yeshayah was a much higher level. But was that also Merkava? Okay, whatever it is. But Yeshayah saw Hashem in a much higher level when Klal Yisrael was not in galus. But Yecheskel Su Hashem is Mangal. Therefore, it's called the Maisa Merkava. Hashem is being seen in transport. Hashem is not being seen Yoshev Al Kisei Ram Venisa. Now, what is very perplexing, what's difficult, which requires we don't ever find in the Torah, in the Mishkan, Hashem is Yoshev Al Akruvim. And the Kruvim represents Hashem's Hadoim Raglav. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Yoshev in Shemayim Al Kisei Ram Benisa. And the Beis HaMikdash is an extension of Hashem's Kisei. It is the Hadoim Raglav. It's the footstool of Hashem's Kisei HaKavod. But the Kisei HaKavod means Hashem is at rest in His home. But here, we're describing it as being the Merkava, the chariot.
You have the Mepharshim on the Pasuk, Rokev Shemayim Be'ezrecha.
Hashem rides. Hashem,
God, when you're in Golos,
Hashem is also Merkava.
Rokev Shemayim, He will travel all over.
With you. Hashem is not sitting on the Kisei HaKavod. Hashem is sitting on His Merkava, on His chariot. So what's difficult here, or maybe it's not difficult, is that that opens up a whole new understanding. The Pasuk is doing something unusual. You don't find Hashem's Yoshev on the Merkava. especially when you're dealing with the building of the Beis HaMikdash. And the Beis HaMikdash was meant to be a permanent resting place for Kadosh Baruch Hu. This was the tafka, this was the goal, this was the purpose of creation. Finally, we're coming to build the Mokom HaShuras HaShem Kadosh Baruch Hu. And yet, what does David say to Shlomo? I've also prepared for you gold, and I've given over you the tavnis of HaMerkava. That's a letdown. What do you mean, I'm giving you the tavnis of the Merkava? I'm giving you the tavnis of Hashem's Hadoim Raglov for the Kisei HaKavot. Why are we calling it Merkav? Merkav is an expression that's used when Hashem is in, when we're in Golos. So, if you read between the lines, what appears to be saying is, David is telling Shlomo, I recognize that this is not the end. The Beis HaMikdash was not Mashiach. The Beis HaMikdash was a stepping stone to go further, to bring Mashiach, to bring the world to its ultimate tikkun, when there would be in an even greater intensification of Kedusha, when the Kodesh HaKadoshim would turn into Hashem's Hadoim Raglov of the Kisei HaKavod. But right now, all you can expect it to be is the Merkava. That's what you have to say. That's a very important point between Merkava and Kisei. Latavnis haMerkava, the image of the Merkava. What is the Merkava? Hakruvim Zohov LaParsim V'Soichem Al Arid Bris Hashem. Now I just want to tell you something that this is totally off the top, but it's current for me. And that's why it disturbs me. I recently asked the Rav. Someone took me into their sukkah recently. They took me into the sukkah before sukkah. So they said, "We have a problem. Can you take a look at my sukkah?" Takes me to this massive sukkah, probably the size of this whole room, until the door here. And I look up, and on top, way up, 30, 40 feet, there's a tree. Massive tree, covers the entire area. And he says to me, "Is it kosher?" I said, "I don't know what to tell you. It seems like we got a problem here." I said, "So just cut down." He said, "Cut down." I said, "The person can afford to miss it. Just can afford to go cut down the tree." He says, "Cut down the tree. It's not my tree. It's the building across the building. And the tree is a massive tree like you never saw. To cut down the tree is thousands of dollars and a lot of red tape from New York City. The permits. It's part of a building. There's a building. A whole story. It's not possible. It's not possible for him to cut down the tree at this point in time. It costs a lot of money and there's a lot of red tape. You have to contact the building, you have to contact the city, and so on. So what was I? So I said to him, I don't know what to do. I went to a Rav. There's someone there, there's a very big time, Muhammad Tarvadas, and I told him the problem. I said, "Listen, I'm not only asking about from him, I'm asking, this is my whole life got this problem. In the backyard, there's always a tree here, a tree there. I always wondered, does it really, if you have schach, and the tree is so high up, at what point in time can you say that a tree is no longer going to be called a hefsek to the
air space?
It can't be that the tree is mamish 50 feet in the air. Right. It's going to be a chatzitza between the aver hashamayim." So he says to me, he has the question, he's going to look into it. So he did it for me, an FBI investigation. You couldn't believe what he did for me. He the Talmud Chacham.
Give him credit.
Unbelievable what he did. His name is Rabbi Frankel. Rabbi Frankel is another. He has a small shul between Avenue K and L on East 13th Street. It's a small shul. They only have.
His father used to be a YU rabbi.
You know who he is? Yeah. Rabbi Frankel. You know that rabbi, Rabbi Frankel?
I know his father.
Okay. So he looked every, and he showed me every single sefer. He showed me it's puzzle. It's shocking. It's puzzle. He says he could not find the head. He brings Shomi Rais. They discuss Shiloh. Even at Mamish, as far as your eyes can see, if you can take a line, it's exactly straight up. It's not Tachas, the Avir Akibas HaShemayim. He says he can't help me. He says he tried, he looked, he understands the question. It's not logical, it's not reasonable, but it is. He says it's a problem. That's the way it is. Okay, fine. Then I met him this week, or a few days ago, and he says, "You wouldn't believe this. I came across a truth from Rav Hagoyen Rav Yecheskel Roth. Rav Yecheskel Roth is a very big poitzek. He's a what? Satman Barbak. He has a tshuva. He showed me the tshuva. Imamish, he addressed the child with the tree. is so up. How far do you go? At what point in time do you say this? So he says, if already it's so high up where it's not affecting your sukkah, it's not providing any shade, which I guess is 20-30 feet, it's not a problem. Right. That's his logic. So he told me, It's an unbelievable tshuva. He doesn't give numbers. But he says if it's already so high up where it's not providing, he doesn't give numbers. It's not providing shade for your sukkah. It doesn't matter.
But if it rains, that tree will diminish.
Yeah, but if you have a building right
I don't know, when it's so high up,
right
when it's so high up, it really doesn't make it. When you get to a certain point, once you get, I don't know the exact numbers, you know yourself, you go outside, you see what trees, the branches are 30 feet in the air. It's not, it does no effect on your sukkah whatsoever, not as far as shade, not as far as rain, not as far as anything. Okay. So he paskins, Rabbi Chesler with paskins, at a one point, at a certain point, doesn't give numbers, it's not going to be a problem. So Rabbi Frankel was in shock. He says, I've gone through every makar, and they, and all the poskim, they discussed the shaila, and they clearly, it doesn't matter, it doesn't matter. And he's matter. He told him, he says, das yachid, I shouldn't rely on him. But, he brought that. So when I was learning this, this only happened 2 days ago, I'm learning this, right away I was thinking about this and this. Where do we learn the Makar for Schach? We learn the Makar for Schach, Sechem Mechan Fame. We one of the Makaris for Schach comes from the word, not here, but in Parshas Truma, that the Kruvim are Sechem Mechan Fame al HaKapoiris. Right? It's Sechem Mechan Fame al HaKapoiris. Which, and we learn the rules of Schach. Now of course, they provide shelter. They provide shelter. They're the ones which soon means that in this chamber, the only thing that provides shelter are these kruvim. Okay, of course, there's a ceiling, there's the rios and the Beis Hamikdash, but it just occurred to me, I don't know if this has any meaning, I'm just telling, just throwing this out, but Shlom HaMelech, he also, in addition to the kruvim that Moshe Rabbeinu made on top of the Aron, he also constructed two giant-sized kruvim. And those giant-sized kruvim were also seich mechan fame over the entire kodesh hakodashim. So, isn't it a chatzitza? Isn't the sechach of the kruvim of Shlomo HaMelech a chatzitza for the sechach of the schach of Moshe Rabbeinu?
No, the schach of Moshe Rabbeinu is a chatzitza to Shlomo's.
Okay, one way or the other, fine. One of them is negating the other.
So that's
so. What's the answer?
Very good.
So what's the answer? The answer is they're not intertwined. Uh-huh. One is so high, the schach of Moshe Rabbeinu is right on top of the Aron. Shlomo HaMelech is in the Kodesh, the massively sized room, the height of the room, I've got the dimension. It's very, very tall. It's very. So once you get to a certain point, they're not intertwined. You see, one schach does not have. Obviously,
the roof of the
no, you can't. You can't take that into account because roof of the because that's a separate issue.
The
roof
of the Kodesh, like 50 amos high,
right? But the schach is not meant to be a schach from Shemayim. The schach is just meant to be to provide shelter. We have here. This is what's meant to provide shelter for the Aron. We have the Sechem Mechan Fame. But there's another schach that's providing shelter. So you're defeating, since the pasuk is using this term and is telling you that it's serving a function, providing shelter. And now there's another schach, so it's Shlomo is ruining the schach of Moshe Rabbeinu. So what's the obvious answer? They're not related. When you have schach pasul and schach kosher, they're intertwined one on top of the other, and they're interfering with one another, and one is running. But when one is so high up and one is low down, even though it's true, it's not mamash tachas avreshmaim. It's not. It's a different realm.
You also have that difference apart. Who says that the wings will
okay,
close.
So that's another question. But it says a soichachin, seemingly, you're looking at you're brainwashed in the picture books where they don't have such good schach. But who says that's really the way it was meant? I don't know. We don't, none of this, everything's a very big mystery. What did it look like? How it worked? But I just, interesting, you have two levels of schach. You have the level of schach of Moshe Rabbeinu, and the level of schach of Shlomo HaMelech. And obviously, it's not a problem. It's not a problem. And they're not intertwined. So why should it be a problem if you have schach posel that is on top of schach kosher, where the schach posel is in a different realm? It's in a whole different realm. Okay, I just wanted to throw that out there. That would be an interesting idea. Rabbi Chesler Roth is a world-renowned posek. He's a world-renowned posek. And he writes in the tshuva, he writes that if the schach is so high up, where it's not interfering with your sukkah, it's not providing any shelter from the environment, The schach of the tree is 30 feet in the area, and if you're outside, and when it rains, you're going to get wet, and when the sun shines, the sun's going to shine on you. It's not doing anything for you because it's all up. It does not disqualify your sukkah.
No, but you made a statement after you.
So I'm telling you what he said. He told me I should not rely upon this because he's researched the issue, and he is a minority opinion.
And I heard the same sukkah from a Lubavitcher.
Okay, Lubavitch can be a riot from. Lubavitch can be a riot from. Because Lubavitch, they're relying on Kulis. They're all over the world, and you gotta do what you gotta do. You gotta do.
Let me ask you a question, Robert. I don't want to get off topic too much. But you often have a Rosh Yochid.
Yeah.
Who passes one way, and the rest of the world is on the other.
Okay, you have no choice. If you have no choice, yesh al mi lismach, but it's not something that you should ideally rely upon. Yesh al mi lismach.
But it's not an idea.
That's what he told me. You should not rely upon lechatchila. If you can go and you can cut down the tree, you should cut down the tree. If you have the opportunity, the ability, and the money to cut down the tree, you should cut down the tree because all the posts that he has found that discuss this issue, they paskin that it is possible. Possible at the kach, you cannot make a bracha. You cannot make a bracha leisha basukkah. You cannot sit in such a sukkah. If there is a tree that is above your sukkah, even 50 feet in the air. But if you're absolutely certain that if you take a plumb line and go from those branches all the way down, it would be directly on top of you, possible. That's what he has discovered from all of his research. And Yecheskel Roth is a minority opinion. So according to his understanding, okay, that's an idea. There's more. Let's just see the Mitzudos and the Rashi, and we'll stop. We did over here two psukim. Let's see the Mitzudos and the Rashi. Pasuk Yud Zayin. Pasuk Yud Zayin v'hamizlagos. Okay, over here he's learning over here according to the Mitzudos. Obviously, he's not learning like the Ibn Ezra. He's learning very similar. He refers to the symbol of the forks. Gamos the Tamis kolakelim oela the mizlagos. Zavtar, Shayim, Zavtar. It's a Pella. Pitchforks made from pure gold. Why would you want that? The Mishkol, Kamayeh, Mishkol, Kolechad, Pasuk Yitches, L'Mizbech, as Mizbech, Shayim, Zav, Mizukok, Mosle, Kamayeh, Mishkol, the weight. Ulatavnis, Amerkava, V'choiz, Mepharish, Shehem. What is the Merkava? The Merkava is HaKruvim, Sha'omdoi, Ba'aretz, that stood on the ground. So here the Mitzudot is learning, not like the Targum, the Kruvim of Shlomo HaMelech. These giant size Kruvim that sit on the ground, Lios Parsim Kanfem L'Sachich Al Oren V'Hayudom L'Masach Chayos, they look like L'Masach Chayos HaMerkava. What do the Chayos HaMerkava look like? I have no idea. What do they look like? You know the story with the Satmar Rav. I think with the Satmar Rav where someone complained that Yechasidim, they're a bunch good for nothings, bunch of wild chayas. So he said, "Yeah, you're right. Chayas hakodesh."
He had a different answer. The original answer was when they came to complain to him.
Yeah.
He said, "Ichav ebegulas mana chasidim in Ashrayz."
Oh, okay. The real chasidim. That's a scary thing to say. All right. L'maisa chayas hamerkav asher. Al pnei adam l'maisa chayas hamerkav asher pnei adam lehena. Okay, they look like chayas hakodesh with a human face, a part of a human being. Ki gam el akruvim hoya pnei tinuk, and because the kruvim. So here he says as follows: the kruvim ki gam el hakruvim hoya pnei tinuk. So the kruvim,
the ones that Shlomo man,
the Adam. So the
was Yaakov.
The tavnis hamerkav v'chayde far shehem akruvim shamdu be'arzlius. Okay, fine. Okay, that's the mitzudos. Let's see Rashi. Rashi. Let's just read a few Rashi's. Pasuk Yud Zayin. Pasuk Yud Zayin. L'koyfer hazav b'mishkol and the wipers, the bowls of gold b'mishkol, according kipoyrei klei shares. Bowls, kifari klei sharis, lekaneach bekelim hadam mehem, to use, to wipe with these kelim hadam mehem. I don't know how to translate these words. It's a hard word to translate. I'm going to get kipari klei sharis, lekaneach, to wipe bekelim hadam mehem, from them. I'm sorry, I don't know how to translate this. The dugma, the perikama, the bava mitzia, the hu gaver, the kofar yodei beglima. He was a person, he wiped his hands, his dirty hands, on the garment of his friend. So he's chayev for damages. So what do we learn over here from this word? We learn the word kofar means to wipe. And that's why these kalim are called wipers, because as I told you, this really gemara, because when the kohen did avoda, they did the matana, they wiped their finger on the back of the kalim. The word kapara, he's now explaining why is it called a person that does an avera, and he's mevakesh slicha v'kapara, atonement, to wipe away. You want Hashem to wipe away. There's a similar thing to wipe it away. It should be on the back. It should be done with v'chitu, your purification. Zav mizukok, k'moy kesef mizukok. The word mizuk means pure, like we find this word more by silver. Ulatavnes amerkava heim hakruv sheheshchina recheves anisa, the kruv which the shchina rides upon. La parsim, the wings, they were spread out. Kolamar hamifudashim haseichim al aron, they were spread out and they provided shelter on the aron. Kid amar v'hoyu hakruvim hakruvim parshe kenafayim, they spread out their wings. Okay, now before I conclude, one last idea. Why did Shlomo indeed make these giant sized kruvim in addition to the kruv of Moshe Rabbeinu? So I once heard a very interesting pshat. The luchos are stored in the Aron. Was that the original intent? If you look carefully in the Torah, that was not the intent. When Hashem gave Moshe Rabbeinu the luchos, it appears not in an Aron. They were to be on display. I ever go to a museum, they have the Sefer Torah on display from the Holocaust museums. It's Shlok HaLoch. They'll do that. It's Bezoyan. Some say it's not such a Bezoyan if it's in the case. Alright, it's a complicated halachic issue. Ideally, the post would not. It's only an after the fact. We're not going to listen to it, so it can be matahedim. But it's not a good idea to put the Sefer Torah open. But ideally, because Samash and the Sukkim there, when Hashem gave Moshe the luchos were meant to be on display. They were meant to be on display. Not to be put in a box, locked up and sealed, tznius. It's only after the Chet HaEgel. After the Chet HaEgel, Moshe Rabbeinu shared the luchos, and Hashem gave Moshe Rabbeinu a new set of luchos. Hashem said, no, the new set of luchos, in addition to the fact that it's not going to be Maaseh Elokim, the luchos themselves were Maaseh Moshe, the Michtav was Michtav Elokim. In addition, another downgrade, it's going to be in a box. I don't want it on display. Because after the Egel, you're not roy for it to be on display. Now here's the question. Where are the kruvim? The kruvim are on top of the aron. Now, what would have been had there not been an egel? The luchos would have been in display, on display, and there would be no box. They would be on display.
There would be no Mishkan, maybe.
Oh, no, so maybe the Mishkan would have been different. Had the Mishkan, we don't know, right? Would it be Mishkan? Not a Mishkan. But it appears that there would have been, we have to make a suggestion, there would not have been an aron, but there would have been kruvim. Because the Kruvim, Hashem's Shechina has to rest on this world. And the resting place of the Shechina is on top of the Kruvim. But there was never meant to be an Aron. The Luchos were to be on public display, and on top of the Luchos would be Kruvim upon which the Shechina would rest. So how big would these Kruvim be? Giant-sized Kruvim. So what Shlomo HaMelech was doing was, he was trying to bring Mashiach. He's trying to make Kruvim, which was the original intent of Hashem before the Chet HaEgel. Let's review. Before the Chet HaEgel, it was not meant to be that the luchos would be put in a box. Luchos were on display. But there also have to be Kruvim. So what kind of Kruvim? Kruvim are not going to go on a box, because there is no box. They're just going to be Kruvim for which the Shechina will rest. That's the Kruvim that Shlomo HaMelech made in addition to the Kruvim of Moshe. We don't live in a perfect world. There has to be a box. And there has to be the Luchos. And upon the Luchos, they are going to be the Kruvim of Moshe Rabbeinu. But maybe one day we can return to that high Madrega of Klal Yisrael before the Chet HaEgel. And then there will be just Kruvim, and the Shechina will be in the open.
You should have put the Kruvim outside the Kaidish
Kedushin. That far you didn't want to go. That far you can't go. It has to be contained inside at least of a holy room. So the Kruvim of Shlomo HaMelech was, so to speak, a bakasha, a tefillah, to bring Klal Yisrael back to the Madrega of before the Chet HaEgel, where the Luchos can be on public display. Okay, with that we will stop.